Blog Talk Radio.
Positive people, people.
Monotheistic views. And I believe that it can.
I'd like to open up with a thought that I heard on a YouTube video. I forget the name of it. It's one that I listened to a couple of years ago. But in this video, a shaman from a Native American tribe was talking to his grandson. And the grandson had asked his grandfather about the old ways. Now, the grandson had kind of lost touch with his tribal roots. And he had been raised in the ways of the white settlers. And he was curious about the old ways. So he asked his grandfather about what it was, or actually what it is, that his grandfather worshipped. His grandfather went on to give a beautiful teaching about how the Native American religion had been completely misunderstood by the white settlers. He said that the white settlers used to think that we worship the sun. And this shaman went on and said, actually, we did not worship the sun. We worship the power of the sun. And then he went on and said, and even that is not entirely true. We didn't really worship the power of the sun. Rather, we worship the power behind the sun. And if you think about your own view of deity or divinity or God or goddess, I think we can relate this understanding to that. When we see the wind, we may think that the wind is an object in and of itself. But if we believe in a creative force behind everything that we see, then we have to also say that there is a power behind the wind. There is a power of the wind, which we see manifested in tornadoes and wind damage and roofs being blown off of houses. But we also know that if there is a creator, you know, if you do believe in either a god or a goddess or multiple gods and goddesses, then there has to be a power behind the wind. And where is that power? Where does that power come from? We see the sun, and we know that there must be a power behind the sun. We see the power of fire. I have candles burning around me now. There is a power in the fire, in the candles, but there is also a power behind the fire. Where does that power come from? And if we consider that the divine source, whatever we call God or goddess, the power behind that idea, that concept, then we have to acknowledge that there is one source behind all of this. You can say that there is the power of one particular deity or another, but there is also a power behind that power. And where does that power come from? In contemplating an infinite creator, an infinite God, the infinite nature of God, we must acknowledge that we don't see the whole picture, that we only see a part of that picture, and we don't really understand the totality of the question. And those people that believe, and believe strongly, in just one God, if you ask them, what is your God like? They may have a good answer from their own scriptures, or they may be somewhat baffled. they may say, well, I don't really know that much about what I call God or the one true God, but this God is preached in our church, or this God is taught in our temple. And the same can be said of various pagan paths and polytheistic paths. If you ask them about their particular God, they may be able to tell you a few stories that illustrate a truth behind their understanding of deity, or they may be completely baffled as well. They may say, well, I don't really know that much about Thor, but Thor is taught in our temple, and that's what I believe. And the whole concept, the whole idea, and the reality of the divine is one that begs a deeper understanding, begs for thought and reflection and meditation. Because the infinite is infinite. We, in this life, in this world, will never see the totality of the infinite, but we can sense it, and we can reflect upon it, and we can come into contact with this divine source. And this requires humility. Many people that preach their own understanding of God, and I will say their own limited understanding of either God or Goddess or the divine source, they may or may not, well, let's just say, a lot of times they do not teach and preach out of a sense of humility. They will teach and preach out of a sense of pride, saying that this one view of God is the absolute truth, and you must believe it, or else. And there's no humility in that statement. There's a lot of pride and arrogance in that statement, because the person assumes that they know the truth, and not just the truth, but the absolute whole truth of the question. And I think a question can rightfully be asked. Do you have the truth? Are you absolutely certain that you know the whole truth? Do you have a complete understanding of the infinite nature of the divine source? And of course, an honest answer to that would be no. That we do not fully understand, but we are growing in our understanding. We don't have all the pieces of the puzzle. We don't see the whole picture. But we do see the bits and pieces of the picture that have been laid before us, and we trust that in the fullness of time, we will see more. And our understanding of the divine, whatever we call it, God or Goddess, or all of the above, or none of the above, that view in time will change. There's an old preaching idea, phrase, from the 1920s and even before that, back in the 19th century, that God don't never change. And that is true up to a point. The transcendental qualities of God do not change. The transcendental qualities of absolute love, absolute forgiveness, absolute truth, absolute beauty, the absolutes, they are absolute, they don't change. But when we see these absolutes worked out, manifested in the material world, a world that is full of change, a world that is constantly in flux and in motion, these transcendental qualities, these absolutes, when they become somewhat limited and begin to manifest themselves in a material nature, we do see them shift, we do see them change, and we may become somewhat confused. But while it can be said that God don't never change, from an absolute sense, from a transcendental sense, we also have to acknowledge that we change. Our views grow. Our views change. And over time, we become different people. And then the absolute divine source behind all creation has to change in order to deal with a changing creation and changing children such as us. I'm going to take a little bit of a break, play an old song by Blind Willie Johnson, God Don't Never Change.
As God, I don't never change. He's God, always will be God. God in the middle of the ocean, God in the middle of the sea, by the help of the great creator, truly been a God to me. He's God, God don't never change. God always will be God. God in the creation, God when Adam fell, God way up in heaven, God way down in hell. He's God. God don't never change. God always will be God. Spoke to the mountain, said how great I am, want you to get up this morning, skip around like a lamb. Well, he's God. God don't never change. God always will be God. God in the time of sickness, God in the doctor too, and the time of the influenza, he truly was a God to you. Well, he's God. God don't never change. He's God. Always will be God. God in the pulpit, God way down at the door, he's God in the amen corner. God don't over the floor. Well, he's God. God don't never change. God always will be God.
Never change, it has been said, but we are changing. Our views are changing. Our experiences vary and change. The God behind creation, the divine source of all, which can rightfully be called neither male or female or neuter, and can also be called all three of the above at the same time, is perfect. It has no need of change. But my own limited view of God tells me that this perfect, unchanging, infinite source has a desire to love, has a desire to create, has a desire to share itself with others. And of course, an infinite God could always share itself with itself. But an infinite creative God, divine source, power behind creation, could choose to spread itself to love through the creative process. And I believe that's what we see here. We see an absolute transcendent God, which is behind creation, but is also perfect without creation. Just perfectly at ease, perfectly comfortable being in its own spiritual skin, if you will. But this perfect absolute being, source of all being, is not satisfied just being with itself. It also desires to create, and to create out of love. And that is where we see the physical world around us taking shape on a day-to-day basis and on a moment-to-moment basis. Creation isn't just something that happened a few thousand years ago and then ended, or a few billion years ago and ended. Creation is a process that is ongoing. We're stuck right in the middle of it. It's happening before our eyes. And the God that we see, or the goddess that we see, or the deity that we see within the creative process, it is related to the absolute divine source of all. But it is a limited reflection of that absolute divine source. It is a manifestation which changes from day to day and from moment to moment. But the power behind this manifestation is the absolute, which can rightfully be said to never change. And that is the constant behind creation and everything that we see around us. So actually, when we look at the question, does God change? We can answer yes, and we can answer no at the same time. Because while there is an absolute, there is also the part of the picture that we see, the part of the picture which is still changing, still forming, still in flux all around us. And so we can say yes and no at the same time in very similar ways and be right on both counts. We can reflect upon this a little bit further by asking about our different views of God or your views of God. When you hit it big, either in a business deal or in the lottery or at the racetrack, when you come into a small fortune, what is your view of God at that point in time? You know, God is a generous benefactor. God is the giver of all good things. Or we may not even reflect on God at all. We may just be so wrapped up in the worldly wealth around us that we don't pause for a moment to reflect on what it is that this worldly wealth is trying to teach us and what it is that the power behind this worldly wealth is trying to teach us. And let us reflect further on what happens, how we view it, when all that wealth disappears. When we go from winning big to losing big, when we go from striking it rich in a good business deal to finding ourselves facing a judge in bankruptcy court, what is your view of God or goddess then, at that point of time? Is it the view of the divine that says, you know, God is the source of all good things? Or is it a view of God or goddess that says, hey, you've screwed up and now I'm punishing you. This is bad karma coming back at you, boy. You made some big goofs, some big mistakes, and now you're being punished for it. That's one view of the divine that might show itself under those conditions. And then there is also the view of the divine that was given by Job when he hit upon hard times. The Lord giveth, and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And in that statement by Job, in the book of Job, we see a truth. That although we live in a world which is constantly changing, in which we have our ups and our downs, in which we may even find ourselves from time to time on an emotional roller coaster, there is a constant behind all of it. Even though there is an ebb and a flow to life in the material world, and there is a power behind it that manifests itself in the spiritual world, there is also a constant. And that constant is the love of the divine source, which can be shown out in a myriad way, myriad different ways, and many, many different forms. I'm going to go ahead and play another song by Capital Sons, Myself in You.
Thank you.
I can see myself in you. That can be said on an earthly level, one lover to another. And it can also be said on a more spiritual level, about our relationship with God. The relationships that we go through at the present time and are going through at the present time, and the experiences that we have at the present moment, in our present point in our history, they all come together to teach us one thing about the divine and our relationship with the divine. And then when that lesson is learned, we move on to other experiences and other lessons to be learned. And these lessons are constantly changing. And so too are our views of God, Goddess, the divine. As we change, so too does our view of the divine, and so too does our relationship with the divine in some small way, or perhaps even in one major way. But the one constant that is there, the one constant which never changes, is that of love. The divine source creates out of love, maintains creation out of love, and reaches out to us out of love. And it can be said that the divine reveals itself, herself, himself to us according to our ability to understand, and the divine source also reaches out to us according to our ability to love. Those who are not very good at the art of love, the practice of love, unconditional love, those of us who are not very good at that will tend to feel more comfortable with philosophy or theology or the life of the mind, you know, mentally trying to grasp these abstract concepts and then bringing them into our brains. But the divine wants so much more than just that. The divine source reaches out to us in love and can reach out to us on a much deeper level through love. And our growth in love will always reveal to us deeper and deeper truths about the divine source. Our love in this world is always conditional. Well, I shouldn't say always, but let's say 9 times out of 10, it's conditional. Now, I love something because I like the way it makes me feel. I love someone because I like the way that you make me feel. I love the birds in the morning because, to me, they sound pretty. And I hate cockroaches in the kitchen because, well, that's just downright nasty. But when we move away from conditional love and into the world, the reality of unconditional love, where we can point to the birds and say, there is a power behind the birds singing, and that power is the divine source. And then we can go and we can look at a cockroach in the kitchen while we're making a sandwich and point to that and say, there is a power behind that cockroach, and that power is the divine source. And even though I may find that cockroach repulsive, even though on an intellectual level I know they carry germs, I know that we'd be better off without them, on a heartfelt level of unconditional love, we have to say that that cockroach is good. A cockroach is a fellow being, a fellow traveler through the process of creation, and that it is all good. Our views on these things do not come preformed. Our views are constantly changing, and it takes time to grow to the level of unconditional love. Most of us will be at the level of conditional love for quite some time. But when we can rightly see the good behind creation, and know that there is a source of all goodness, source of all truth, source of all being, source of all love. And we can relate to this divine source of all through the quality of unconditional love and become more like this divine source in love. Then our spiritual growth takes a gigantic leap forward. When I was growing up in high school, and I believe in grade school, we were taught the story of a certain pharaoh from Egypt called Akhenaten. And he was revealed to us as being sort of a heretic, according to the priests and the temples of Egypt. This is a pharaoh that came forth in a society that taught that there were many, many, many different gods and had temples dedicated to many different gods. And Akhenaten said, no, there is only one God. And this is the God that he depicted in the form of a solar disk. Might easily be confused with a sun god. He called this one god Aten. And he went and he decreed that all the temples worshiping all the other gods would be shut down. All the high priests that officiated in those temples were out of work. And all the people that created statues and idols and created old manners of items that were used in the worship of these many different gods found themselves out of work. Akhenaten, who lived about 1350 BC or reigned about that time, made it illegal to worship any other god besides the Aten. And we were told in grade school and high school and even into college that this pharaoh was considered to be a heretic because he preached only one god and did away with the worship of the many. And that's a part of the picture. That is a part of the picture right there. That this monotheistic ruler made polytheism illegal, at least from the point of view of the average person on the street. But it can also be said that Akhenaten was considered to be a heretic, not because he forbade polytheism and embraced the worship of one god, monotheism, but because he took a truth which all the other priests in Egypt had known for generations and had kept quiet except being revealed to a few initiates within the temple courts. And that was that just as the Aten can be seen as a sun god or can be seen as the power behind the sun, so too were all the other gods and goddesses that were worshipped within the land of Egypt, that they could be seen as different gods, that they could also be seen as different manifestations of a one divine source, and that they could also be seen as the power behind those different qualities that each god and goddess depicted in their own manifestation and form. Just as we can say that there is a god of thunder and that there is a power behind the thunder and that there is an absolute source of the manifestation of thunder, and the same with rain, and the same with wind, and the same with earthquakes, and the same with everything else in this material world. It is also known that there is one power behind these many, many different manifestations. And I believe that's probably why Akhenaten got in trouble with the temple priests of Egypt. Not simply because he was embracing the worship of one god above the worship of many gods, but because he was letting it slip out that there was one source behind all the different gods and goddesses that were worshipped in ancient Egypt. I'm going to pause for a moment and play another song, and I will be back after this. Hare Krishna. Others may say, God bless. Others may speak of Jesus. Others may speak of Allah. Others may speak of Buddha. And these seem like different gods, different deities. And they can rightfully be seen as different ways of understanding deity. Today, some people are celebrating pagan rituals. Others are going to be celebrating just getting out in nature and enjoying a pleasant springtime afternoon. We just finished up not too long ago with the Christian celebration of Easter and the Jewish celebration of Passover. And these different practices, these different views, they all teach us different things about the divine. And that is one strength that something I'm going to call enlightened polytheism has, is that it allows us to contemplate one aspect of the divine nature and adore it and contemplate it and try to more fully understand it, not just on a head level, but at a heart level. We may call these different manifestations, well, we do call these different manifestations different things, and they can appear to us as many, many different gods. But when we reach the point of view that no matter what we're talking about, whether we're talking about Christ or Buddha or Krishna or the many different pagan gods and shamanic names for God or goddess and divinity, when we can come to the understanding that these different manifestations of the divine are not the divine in and of themselves, but reflect the power of the divine coming forth and being made manifest to us in the physical world, then I believe we can rightfully see enlightened polytheism as an aid to monotheistic points of view. When we speak of the divine, we know, or we should know, that we are speaking about a topic that is so huge, a being which is so huge, a being that cannot even rightfully be called being, because this being is the source of all being, and this being is being itself. Now, when we try to contemplate the infinite divine source, we can't fathom it, not in its whole, not in its totality. So what we have to do, according to the viewpoint of what I'm going to call enlightened polytheism, is take this huge, colossal being behind being, beingness itself, and break it down into different units. Break it down into different boxes where we can look at it, examine it, get comfortable with it, be in awe of it, and just come to a better understanding of it. But at the same time, recognizing that what we have before us is just one small box, one thing that can fit on our plate so that we can examine it, study it, enjoy it, and find that we are at one with it. But that one little aspect of the divine is just that, one aspect of the divine. The total nature of the divine cannot be boxed in. It's too big. We don't have a box big enough to box it in with. So according to the teachings of enlightened polytheism, what we do, we take one aspect that we can comprehend, that part of the truth that is being revealed to us, and we take that one small aspect, and we can call it whatever we like. We can call it Allah. We can call it God. We can call it Goddess. We can call it Hecate. We can call it Apollo. You know, we can call it Zeus. But no matter what we call it, it teaches us one aspect of the totality of the divine nature, the divine source. And as long as we understand this and we keep this in mind, that when we look at one aspect of the divine, that this is just one aspect that is being revealed to us, we do well. You know, we don't fall into the trap of idolatry. Trap of idolatry, as I understand it, is taking that one small piece of the puzzle, that one aspect of the divine that we can box in and then say, that's all there is. This is the divine. This is my God in a box. And you know what? My God in a box is better than your God in a box. And folks that have been involved in monotheism and monotheistic religions have been about this practice for centuries of taking their own limited view of God and then saying, this is all that there is, and this view of God is better than your view of God. And this is the stuff that conflicts arise out of, have arisen out of, and unfortunately will continue to arise out of, is this part of our egoic human nature that has a strong desire not just to be right, but a desire to be absolutely right, and a desire to be in control of all things, whether we are actually in control of it or not. And this reflects in our religious practices. But when we can have a sense of humility, and that humility saying that, telling us and having us tell others, I do not have all the answers. I do not have a complete understanding of God. I can give you a thumbnail sketch based on my few limited life experiences or even my few past life experiences, but I do not see the whole. Not yet. Not in this human form, and not in this present material world, but I am growing, and I seek to come to a deeper understanding of the divine each and every day, by whatever name we may call it. And that is where people can devote themselves to one view of God or Goddess or to another, and do perfectly well if they recognize that they are devoted to this concept of God or Goddess out of love, and out of a sincere desire to reach out to the divine and also to their fellow human beings. It has been said that God is love. It can also be said that Goddess is love. And it can be said that love is a transcendent quality which goes beyond our limited human experiences and goes well beyond this material world that we see ourselves in. And when our different views of gods and goddesses and the stories that we tell about different gods and goddesses, when they teach us about how God loves, how God reaches out to us in love, and how we are called to reach back out to God and to one another in love, then these different stories, these different views of many different gods bring us to an understanding of the one divine source behind all things, which is, or can be said to be, in imperfect human words, unconditional love in action. And so there we have it. Worshipping many different gods may be seen by those of us that come from the monotheistic branches of religion as being a heresy, as being a silly, superstitious activity. But when we recognize that these worship of many different gods and goddesses are actually honoring the divine, the one divine source in all of its many different manifestations, and that each of these gods and goddesses teach us an important lesson about the one divine source, then we can see that enlightened polytheism can actually be a benefit to those of us in the monotheistic faith, or those of us who have been in monotheistic practices. When asked about the totality of the divine nature, I think the most profound thing we can say is simply that it is. It is being. It is love. It is. But when we look at the different polytheistic faiths and the different expressions of the different gods and goddesses, and we see them not as different individuals in and of themselves, but as different breakdowns of different aspects of the One, then they can teach us a great deal about the One. But we have to have it not just one way, not just two ways, but we have to have it many different ways, that we can see the One in the many and know that the many are different aspects of the One. And there's no contradiction there. It may sound contradictory as heck, but that's just the way it is. There is the one source that breaks itself down into many different manifestations, and we look at all the different parts, and we think that all these different parts are separate. But in actuality, all these different parts are simply parts of a greater whole. And that the whole is far, far greater than any of these individual parts. And when we can see the One in the many, and look at the many, and hear them speak to us of the One, then we can see that monotheism and polytheism in an enlightened form go hand in hand. There isn't just one God. Well, there is. But from our point of view, the One breaks itself down into many, because the One has a great desire to share itself with others through the process, the practice of unconditional love. And when we can grasp that idea of love, when we can begin to live that idea of love, when we can live the reality of love, then we are close to God. However we understand this concept, however we understand the divine source. If you're a kind of person that when you're driving down the road and you stop to see if you can help out of love, then you're close to God. If you're the kind of person that sees a stray dog on the road and then, rather than stopping to see if you can help it, you actually speed up and swerve so you can hit it, well, you're not very close to God, at least as I understand God. You have a ways to go to be able to understand the unconditional love of the divine. But it's all part of the process, all part of the journey. And we can link hands and come together in helping one another to understand different aspects of the divine source. This is Frater Ralph signing off. And leave you with Gandhi's Triumph by Celtic Reggae Revolution. I'm wishing you blessings upon your weekend.